So as part of that work, as we prepare to enter into the musical Pippin that we're inviting you to hear excerpts of this morning, this musical is very much in line with our fourth UU principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It's not just the free search that can lead us anywhere. It's the free and responsible church that also results in community, in peace, and justice. And to me, this opening number that we'll soon hear is all about bringing our full selves. You'll hear so many different aspects of life named in this song. All the parts of our life, all of the life of the world, good and bad, bringing that with us to this place. And about the magic and transformation that happens here each time we gather. I'm grateful for your presence here this morning and this week, as with each Sunday morning. We have magic to do. The Broadway musical Pippin was first performed in 1972. Who's seen it performed in some venue or seen the movie or any of that? All right. With the recent success of the Broadway film adaptation Into the Woods, the same team is now working on a Hollywood film version of Pippin. So, coming soon, probably on December 25th release, right? That's when they tend to release these things. Happy birthday, Jesus. It's Broadway, right? Anyway. The musical tells the story of Pippin, the firstborn son of Charlemagne, who in the year 800 CE became the first recognized Roman emperor in Western Europe since the collapse of the Western Roman Empire 3 centuries earlier. But don't get me wrong, this play is not about historical accuracy. It's about a person's existential search for truth and meaning. And through the magic of the stage, Pippin is accompanied on his journey by a troupe of performers led by a leading player. And as a prince born into royalty and incredible privilege, Pippin at first thinks quite a lot of himself. We'll be playing Pippin for our first song. Thank you, Moy. And as he becomes king himself in the wake of his father's death, he actually kills his father in a very Freudian twist, he anticipates that ruling's gonna be easy, as Mel Brooks used to say, right? It's good to be the king, you know? And it's good to be the king, especially when you are extraordinary.
Patching the roof and pitching the hay. It's not my idea of a perfect day. When you're extraordinary, you gotta do extraordinary things.
As you can perhaps guess, ruling a kingdom, just like being a parent or going to school or having a job, is often much more complicated in reality than in theory. And it doesn't always go so swimmingly if you just want to deal with the extraordinary things and not with the ordinary reality. As it turns out, being king or just trying to change the world is hard. Indeed, in the play, Pippin confesses at one point that I have an overwhelming need to feel completely fulfilled all the time. And it's never once happened to me, and I'm filled with despair. Now, we have some words for this. Entitlement. Narcissism. But saying that to the king can get you executed. But this next song is all about when you realize that and theory meets reality and the extraordinary meets the ordinary. This next song is about finding your actual place in the world. Because Pippin shows us that even if you're the king, there are still money limitations, power dynamics causing conflicts, and powerful institutions resisting change. And for the rest of us, the question is often raised for us in different ways at various seasons of our life of discerning how we can make a difference in this world and leave this world and those around us better for us having lived. And at the different seasons of our lives, different ways of approaching what is sometimes called vocational discernment or calling resonate with us differently. So as we prepare to listen to the next song, I invite you to consider, in this current season of your life, Which of the following three definitions of calling most resonates with you? The first is from Frederick Buechner. He writes that neither the hair shirt or the soft berth will do. So the hair shirt people used to wear underneath in the Middle Ages, that would just constantly chafe them and remind them to, you know, follow the religious way that they felt called to. He says, just constantly chastising yourself won't work, but neither will a soft berth. So like for a B-E-R-T-H, right? Not B-I-R-T-H. Soft berth, like for a ship, that if you leave a ship in a soft, loose berth, if a storm comes, then it'll slam around and get broken. So he says, neither of those extremes will do. The place you are called to is where your deep gladness meets the world's deep hunger. The place you are called to is where your deep gladness meets the world's deep hunger. Positive psychologist Tal Ben-Shahar, who constructed one of what may still be the most popular courses at Harvard on happiness, calls this the intersection between pleasure and meaning. The intersection between pleasure and meaning. So that's one of the three definitions I invite you to consider on this Pippin-inspired search for truth and meaning. The second is from Robert Frost's poem, Two Tramps in Mud Time. He writes in one stanza, my object in living is to unite my avocation and my vocation. As my two eyes make one in sight, where love and need are one, and work is play for mortal stakes. So your avocation is your hobby, and your vocation is typically what you get paid for. So Frost is saying, what would it mean to unite more your vocation and your avocation, where love and need are one and work is play for mortal stakes? And the third definition comes from the African-American spiritual leader, Howard Thurman. Howard Thurman, as I've said before, wrote a book called Jesus and the Dispossessed. It was the one book in addition to the Bible that Martin Luther King Jr. carried around with him always in his briefcase. Howard Thurman wrote, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come fully alive. Because what the world needs is people who are fully alive and engaged and connected. Novelist Gail Godwin in her book Evensongs says this similarly, that your vocation is what keeps making more of you. So it's not your vocation when it leaves you feeling diminished and alienated and drained and enervated. It's your vocation when it leaves you energized and there is more of you and more connected. Even if you're tired, it's the good kind of tired, not the wearisome kind of tired. So as you've listened to these definitions of calling and vocation, perhaps what is maybe most important is not which of those three definitions of discernment resonates with you most. Maybe it's the cumulative effect of them. Maybe it's what you might feel opening up within you as you listen to those definitions or as you listen to this song to come. That intersection between your deep gladness and the world's hunger, the uniting of your avocation and your vocation, or thinking about what makes you feel fully alive and connected and grateful. Where are you uniquely able to make a difference in this world? You still have to do those ordinary things too. But what are those extraordinary things that you can do because you're uniquely gifted to do them? In this season of your one wild and precious life, what is your corner of the sky?
Maybe one misty day you'll waken to find me gone. And far away you'll hear me singing to the dawn.
And you'll wonder if I'm happy there a little more than I've been. And the answer will come back to you like laughter on the wind.
Rivers belong where the
as Pippin continues on his journey to find his corner of the sky. The next three songs are about the advice he is given by wisdom figures on the way. The first, the leading player, challenges him that rather than being and demanding extraordinary all the time, it may be instead the simple, ordinary parts of life, those parts he thought he was too good for, where he would actually find his greatest, most long-lasting happiness, those parts of life that the leading player calls simple joys.
Sweet summer evenings, hot wine and bread, sharing your supper, sharing your bed. Simple joys have a simple voice. It says, why not go ahead? And wouldn't you rather be a left-handed flea, a crab on a slab at the bottom of the sea, than a man who never learns how to be free? Not till he's cold and dead. Well, I sing you the story of a sorrowful lad. He had everything he wanted, didn't want what he had. He had wealth and pelf and name and fame and all of that noise, but he didn't have none of those simple joys.
Anyone curious, I did have to look up what pelf means in that last song. Anybody know? All right. SAT words. Anyone paying attention? All right. Money, especially when gained in a dishonest or dishonorable way. Pelf. And indeed, studies have shown that the relationship between increased income and increased happiness decreases precipitously once you make $75,000 a year. Now, up until that point, it makes a big difference. But after that point, the correlation really decreases. So all the money in the world, no matter how you earn it, is unlikely to buy you happiness once you've gotten, through however means, $75,000 a year. Ish. It probably goes up a little bit every year with inflation. But finding what makes you feel content and grateful and connected and alive, those simple joys, is vitally important. Because as Pippin's grandmother reminds him in this next song, when you look back, it can seem as if an entire lifetime has passed in just no time at all.
When you are as old as I, my dear, and I hope that you never are, you'll woefully wonder why, my dear, through your cataracts and catarrh, you could squander away or sequester a drop of a precious year. But if your best days are yester, the rest are twice as dear.
The third and final piece of wisdom offered to Pippin on his journey is often also from the leading player, but now the leading player has become, well, two. Who's Pippin? Or does it matter? Three leading players. Pay no attention. It's all good. So in our case, leading players, plural, who assure Pippin that he is on the right track. But if you've seen the play or just kind of know about people who've gone, like all of us, on kind of a roller coaster through this life, that wisdom that you're on the right track can seem controversial or at least paradoxical. Advice, depending on where you find yourself currently in this season of your life. But I'm reminded of hearing the singer-songwriter David Wilcox introduce his song, Hold It Up to the Light. He uses the example of the anxiety he used to feel whenever he saw like a framed picture or heard some reference to Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken, in which Frost writes about all those choices that we make in this life. He writes that two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry that I could not travel both and be one traveler, Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. And then I took the other as just as fair as having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for the passing there, had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no steps had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how one way leads to another, I doubted if I should ever come back to this particular fork, right, on this particular road at this time. And Frost says, I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence, that two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Those are the words that used to haunt Wilcox. And he says he used to feel that he couldn't make any choice. He felt like he was just isolated there, because what if he chose wrongly and didn't take the road less traveled? But it turns out that, as the social activist Howard Zinn reminds us, in general and in relationship to situations of injustice, you can't stay neutral on a moving train. And time is a moving train. But over time, Wilcox, as he read the poem more closely and kind of slowed down, he noticed that in the middle of the poem, he said, you know, everyone always pays attention just to the end of the poem. But in the middle, he eventually noticed that Frost admits that the paths had worn them really about the same. And Wilcox says he's come to think that Frost was actually speaking ironically at the end of the poem, and that the ending can throw you off if you read it too quickly. Now, this insight doesn't necessarily apply if the two paths aren't really equal choices, all things being equal. If one path is clearly off a cliff, this does not equally apply. But Wilcox has come to think that what Frost is saying is that at many points in her life, there really are equally valid choices, but real choices that we have to make. And this idea that the choice you made has made all the difference is in many cases just a trick of retrospect as we come to make meaning at the end of our lives. Our invitation then, wherever we find ourselves, is perhaps to take our past, all those choices we've made, our path where we find ourselves now, and all the possibilities that remain out in front of us, and to hold those up to the light, to honor them. And if we're doing that, to honor this journey thus far, and that will leave us poised to make a good journey from henceforth, to honor where we are right now and trust that we're on, to the best of our ability, the right track.
You look frenzied, you look frazzled, peaked as any owl, flushed and rushed and razzled, dazzled. Dry your lips, damp your scalp. Now I can see you're in a rut, you're in disarray. And I'm not one to butt in, but in fact, I must say.
Our next to the last number is one of the love songs from Pippin. It will also serve as our offertory. With only a few adjustments, we can hear, and substituting so we don't get into ethical violations here, right? With only a few adjustments, we can hear this song not only about the promises of romantic love that were so important to the young Pippin, but also about the support we find from friendship and community. And in the play, Pippin soon discovers after this song, as we all do, that romantic love is not enough to sustain a relationship for a lifetime. It takes regularly recommitting to kindness, to compassion, to forgiveness, all the practices that are required to support and sustain any diverse beloved community, which a diverse beloved community is like two or more people, right? So it's complicated when you just add that one other person. And again, we're so grateful for your presence here this morning. And that one other person can be us too, right? It's, of course. So we're grateful for your presence here this morning, as well as the commitment and support for our growing music ministry here at UECF, being able to plan and hold this annual music service, as well as all the programs and ministries and opportunities here at UECF. Those are all 100% supported by your generosity. I encourage you to give generously as you feel led to support the ongoing work of this community. The offering will be gratefully received.
My days are brighter than morning air.
We are grateful for these offerings and pledge to use them for the building up of the beloved community here and in our community. And as we prepare to extinguish our chalice this morning, to extinguish the flame we have kindled for this hour, we are different for having spent this hour together. And may your experience this morning continue to enliven and inspire your and our ongoing search for truth and meaning as we individually and collectively continue into this life and continue to seek our corner of the sky. Hear it for the choir. How about the soloist? Can you all take another bow? Soloist. Nick on piano. Mark on drums. Our music director, Deb. All right. Who else, Deb? Oh, sound? Josh, exactly. All right, y'all, full chorus, take a bow. Thank you all so much. All right, y'all can be seated. Thank you so much. It was wonderful. So as we come to the end of this morning's search for truth and meaning, there's one of a few lines that are said at the end of the play, kind of woven into the finale. The one that really stood out to me was when Pippin says, "If I'm never tied to anything, I'll never be free." He comes to realize, if I'm never tied to anything, that is its own form of unfreedom. Of refusing to ever be tied to anything. And there's a lot of freedom that has been hard won in liberal religious communities, you know, but the shadow side is if it becomes only ever freedom from, that we become only about freedom from and all the things we don't believe, and we never affirm all the things that we can choose freely to be for freedom, for justice, for beloved community, for compassion. For kindness in this world and how we treat ourselves and one another and this planet. So as you go, continue your journey through this world walking in love. Care for one another and care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And as you go, know that whatever taste or touch you've had in this time and place of hope, of love, of peace or joy, that goes with you out into the world. So live boldly and with thanksgiving. Go in peace.